This is the Living Legacy Project, normally at the Birchfield Penny Arts Center, but today we are at GCR Studios with Robbie Takak.
Yes.
Yeah. And the first thing I want to ask you, GCR stands for Good Caramel, or is that how you say it, or Caramel?
Well, that's our, yeah, that's my record label, Good Caramel Record.
And is that what the space is known
well,
as?
Well, that's, I guess, yeah, yeah, what we named it after, but mm-hmm. yeah. And there's a few studios in this building as well.
Okay.
Yeah, we rent out some space downstairs to a couple of filmmakers and a couple of local producers. And yeah, so, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on here.
Well, as I've been interviewing more and more musicians, I've been running into the questions of how musicians like to refer to themselves. You know, from where I stand, you know, I see it as such a creative process, and I refer to musicians as artists as well, but when you conceptualize of yourself, do you identify as an artist as well, or do you really identify as more of a musician?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I think, I mean, artist sounds like a lofty term, but, you know, if you're masterful at something you do, you know, you're an artist. And so, yeah, you know, I guess I do consider people who make music or people who can make a nice cabinet by hand, you know, I think that, yeah, I think they're all artists. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Awesome. Okay, good. So that helps me with how I want to talk about some things. So, Robbie, you were born in West Seneca.
Yes.
And you lived here most of your young adult life. And then, you know, as the Goo Goo Dolls took off and things like that, traveled, and you came back to Buffalo. The first question I like to ask is, what inspired you to want to be a musician, or how did that start for you?
I guess when you're young, you look for a place to fall, you know, your place to fall into, you know, the group of people, you know, you can fall into. And you know, there's sports, there's people who fall into sports, there's people who fall into academia, there's people who, you know, are great painters and drawers, and you know, I fell in with a group of people that weren't necessarily the musicians, but we were the kids that liked rock music, and we liked that kind of thing. And although I took some lessons myself, you know, the things that I was always trying to do, the things we were trying to do as we were growing up, you know, was to put together a great band, you know, that could go out and fall into our place as, you know, the band. And that's what we did. And, you know, I think we got all the lessons that people got through sports with that. You know, I think we learned teamwork, and we learned, you know, practicing, and, you know, we learned, you know, devotion to something, you know, that meant something to you enough to give up other things for, and that sort of thing. So, yeah.
When did you start playing your instruments, start playing bass guitar?
I started playing in bands probably like third grade, probably, yeah. And the kids were older that I was playing with, so sort of like when you end up goalie, you know, because you're the kid. Like, I sort of ended up bass player because I was a kid. Nobody really wanted to be the bass player, so I ended up playing bass. And many bands, and that just became my instrument. So,
Yeah. Do you still feel deeply connected to that instrument, or have you branched out to, like, what are some other instruments you play?
Well, I mean, I play not well many things, you know. You know, with the computer these days, you can play an awful lot of things. You know, I think I'm a pretty good bass player because I've been doing it for 30 some years, you know, on a pretty consistent basis. So I've become good. You know, I don't think I'm necessarily an amazing musician or anything like that, you know, but I know how to do a good rock show. You know, I know how to go in and make a record sound good. And, you know, so like I said, you do this for 30 years, you know, you learn some of that stuff along the way. And if you're paying attention.
One of the things that I find so fascinating about you and your career and where you've been and where you are is the energy you've put back into Buffalo in many ways. And I know that you get a lot of praises for that here in town and that sort of thing. But I see a lot of what you do both with producing as well as a form of creation. And, you know, it's helping forms of art be realized and be, you know, come into existence. And I see the same thing with music as art.
Yeah.
And some of that. And at some point, I really actually, like, the things that I find most interesting that, like, I think a lot of people have talked to you about your time with Goo Goo Dolls. You know, that's, those conversations have happened.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it's, you know, that's all part of being, you know, I mean, a Goo Goo Dolls have been through so many phases. You know, we've been through playing in bands. We've been through, I mean, we've done pretty much the spectrum of the things that are to be done. And we continue to do, you know, we have a, you know, we're working on album number 11 in the next couple of months. You know, that's wild to me. You know, but with Goo Goo Dolls, you find the things you do real well within that organization and within that creative process. And those are the things you do. But some of the things slip away that you used to do when the band first started. You know, we used to, you know, make our cassette covers. You know, we used to, you know, write up contracts. You know, some, you know, just, you know, book gigs. You know, I don't know, whatever. Just make tours happen, you know, make recordings happen, you know. So being in Goo Goo Dolls and doing lots of other things like music is art, like helping boost the arts here in town, you know, by producing local bands here in town. You know, my wife's from Japan, like releasing Japanese music over here in North America, like, and planning tours for those bands and you know, doing all these sorts of things, like, just exercises different parts of your mind, you know, makes you do different things, you know, deal with graphics on a level I don't deal with my band, you know, deal with layout, you know, deal with, you know, things like that. I do some of that with my band, but, you know, we've got an army working with us, you know, scattered all over the country, and so I find all these other things, like, personally, for me, it lets me do all this cool, fun stuff that I like to do that, you know, I don't get to do in the context of Goo Goo Dolls, which I get to do amazing and fun things in. So, you know, if I can figure out a way, and it looks like, you know, I feel like I have, you know, had some success in of satiating that need in myself and helping out some people around here. You know, it takes some work. I'm not going to lie. It's like, there's a lot of meetings. There's a lot of, you know, obligations, you know, that come with doing that kind of stuff too. But, you know, you just got to be willing to do that and make that commitment. And, you know, it's all worth it in the end. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a fascinating set. I guess I've never thought of, you've gotten, you know, the Goo Goo Dolls have gotten so big that there's some fun things that you don't get to do with
them anymore. Yeah, it's true. You know, it's like, there's things I don't get to do, you know, like, because there's things I know how to do real well within our organization, you know, and I do those things, and, you know, and that's sort of my role. Yeah, so it's fun. Mm-hmm. You know, I would probably go nuts with just writing a couple songs every 4 years and, you know, touring and playing our same songs over and over again for 25, 30, almost 30 years now. Like, you know, I would probably go crazy if I didn't have some other outlets that let me go, oh, yeah, I can still, like, you know, I don't know, do these other things too.
And creative juices. Yeah. Where you put those energies.
Yeah. And, you know, being able to steer creative people, like what the Music is Art Festival ends up being, like, that, it's just like, it's like painting, man. You know, it's like, you know, it's like creating something whose mark is going to last because of all the good people involved. Like, you know, like, that's awesome, you know, and that's amazing. And it's not something that you can just do, like, you can't put it together, like, just on a whim. You know, you gotta grow into it. Like, it's gotta grow from something that started out real. You know, Music is Art, the organization, started out as a little party because I was pissed off about the Allentown Art Festival.
Could you tell that story?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I when we started out, I had opened a studio down the street from where we are now, and we were sitting around one day after we were recording, and someone had mentioned to me that there was a moratorium on people doing any business outside their business on the days that the Allentown Art Festival were running in a certain perimeter. And, you know, I always loved the Allentown Art Festival, you know, and I thought that that was great, but, you know, the punk rocker in me decided that I thought that that wasn't, like, the smartest thing to do. So I booked, like, 30 some bands in my parking lot, and, you know, it was a reaction, 100%. It was a reaction. You know, I was like, yeah, we should do this because there's going to be 100,000 people down here. And, you know, we're going to have bands playing. People are going to come. We get some of our artist friends who couldn't necessarily afford, you know, to pay the entrance fee to get into an event like that. You know, we can let them display their paintings. We wouldn't let anybody sell anything. And, yeah, we made it happen over 2 days. And they tried to stop us many times by getting injunctions against us and sending the health department. And yeah, it was pretty crazy. We were running around with the TV news crews, like, up to their door. And down at City Hall, and it was in the newspapers, and because they were trying to stop us from doing this show, which happened anyway. But what we found at the end of this whole thing, because it takes a lot of people to make something like that happen, you know, and we not only had that, we had, you know, hot dogs and a beer garden for the bands that were involved, and some of the bands recorded it. Some of the bands played in our building through a big plate glass window with a PA outside, and we recorded that stuff. It was like, you know, there's a lot going on. You know, we had DJs and, like I said, art installations and some dancers, and, you know, but it was very small. You know, it wasn't like a huge event. And it's grown every year. We did it the next year, and it got a little bigger, and it did it the next year, and we got a little bigger, and some personnel changed down at City Hall, and we ended up getting thrown out of Allentown. But by that point, there was kind of some steam behind what we were doing, and we found out right at the last minute that we weren't going to be able to have it. So everybody was like, okay, well, let's not do it, you know. And by that point, we needed a pretty big infrastructure. You know, we were having a lot of artists, and so we moved it out to the Erie County Fair instead, and that was like a really bad move. I was in Japan, and it was kind of like the lost year. Mm-hmm. But we came back into the city. We moved onto the grounds of the art gallery, and since then, it's like, aside from some weather issues, it's been pretty amazing. You know, we're up to like 13 stages now.
It was incredible last year.
Yeah, and thanks to the infringement folks coming on, it's like we're starting to have like a little bit more busking and a little bit more sort of stuff going on in the woods and DJs and boats. And
Vikings.
Vikings.
Did you see that guy?
What? Yeah, that's my friend David. Yeah, man. There's some characters in this town, and that's what that event's kind of come to represent. You know, it's like, you know, you can come be a character, and we're not going to ask you to pay $150 to come and set up your scene, man. Just set up your scene, and you know, if you want to be in our tents, because we have tents, you know, then you can set up in the tents. If you want to set up in the woods, go set up in the woods, man. It's, you know, feel free, you know, like because there's a lot of room here, way more room than we can possibly use. You know, last year a band just came and set up right in the middle, right in the middle of the pavilion. They just set up and played for like 4 hours, and it's like, you know, someone came up and said, "Should we stop them?" And I'm like, I don't. They don't seem to be bothering anybody. You know, they kind of like added their own stage. You know, like that stuff's like awesome to me.
It's,
you know,
so egalitarian.
Yeah. You know, we have obviously scheduled entertainment. You know, and 98% of it from Buffalo, we're from Western New York, which is pretty awesome. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think there's another one half day event, you know, that kind of represents such a wide swath. Mm-hmm.
Swath
of what's going on, you know, here. But you know, there's so many great people that help put it together. You know, that's how it is able to operate. Mm-hmm. But like I said, from us seeing how excited people were about helping out, we began branching out in different directions. When we first started, we were collecting instruments. It's the very first thing we did. We were collecting instruments, and we collected instruments with Channel 2, and we did it with 97 Rock and The Edge and a few other radio stations. And we went around to a few malls, and we collected instruments, and we collected pretty much an entire Ryder truck worth of used instruments. And that's kind of when we started kind of getting into, wow, we can kind of like get some volunteers together. We can make stuff happen. And as we were doing that, we were approached by a school. They called us up and left a message for me and said, "You guys do programming in schools?" And I was like, "Sure, we do programming in schools." And then I showed up at our hinky little board meeting and went, "So, how do we do programming in schools?" Because I told somebody we did programming in schools. So we brought a few people on and put a really hinky board together of some really passionate people, you know, from our festival committee. And when I say hinky, I don't really mean that. We didn't know what it was. You know, we didn't even know. I mean, we didn't elect officers. We didn't have bylaws. We didn't have anything. You know, we would do all our work when we started running more and more programs. We started running programs with the Mental Health Association. We started running programs with a few other organizations along the way. And you know, the more and more we sort of started to do, the more and more legitimate we needed to become. Because, you know, as my father, who started my board because he was afraid I was going to go to jail, not because we were doing anything wrong, because I wasn't keeping track of what we were doing, came in, started a board of directors. We hired, you know, a chair, you know, we hired an executive director. We got a chair, you know, we got some set of bylaws. We went in, you know, we do annual meetings, you know, the whole thing. We're together now. It's like 13 member board, you know, working board, you know, of some real passionate people. You know, we've run summer camps now. We've run winter jazz festivals, battle of the bands, high school programs, you know, many of them actually over the past 10 years. You know, it's funny because, you know, you finish them and you learn an awful lot about jumping into this stuff the first time. It's like almost like every time it feels like those first festivals, you know, where it's like you finish and you were like, what was I thinking? You know, what was I thinking? Like, why did I do it like that? But that's only something you learn from experience. And, you know, once again, just like I said about the festival, you know, being real about it and going in and willing to let your passion kind of pull you and guide you through that stuff and you know, then deal with the consequences, learn some stuff, and then move on to what comes next.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
And it's so, I mean, what I've been hearing as I've been listening to you is just, it's such a Buffalo thing to happen, to get so much grassroots support.
Oh, yeah. You know, the punk rockers that I knew when I was growing up in the Continental back in the 80s, you know, like those were the people that I still knew when I came back here. And when we were reaching out to people, that attitude of don't tell us what to do. Like, I was still young enough, you know, I wasn't quite 40 yet, you know, when we were starting this stuff, you know, it's like, you know, I was still in my, you know, mid 30s. It's like, you know, I was, you know, I had a lot of, you know, I just had a lot of, you know, just vim and vigor, I guess, back then. You know, when you told me not to do something, I was like, whoa, wait a minute, man. You know, what do you mean I can't do this? You know, I'm a taxpayer. This is my parking lot, you know, and so I'm going to have some rock bands play and I'm going to donate the money to Roswell Park and, you know, and so now tell me to stop, you know, that kind of thing.
And in some ways I think it's such, I mean, it's, yeah, you were both like going against the grain, but still working within the constructs of what's supposed to be acceptable, you know? And so the closer I've become with infringement over the years, I've seen a similar push for why infringement exists, you know? Yeah. And in some ways where infringement is like fiercely egalitarian and non-hierarchical and anti-capitalistic, you know? There's something about this environment in Buffalo that both needs organizations like Music is Art and Infringement and also can support them.
Yeah.
Like this is an environment that people see the value in.
Yeah, they do for sure.
Not taking people's shit.
Yeah,
you know?
They do for sure. Yeah. They do for sure. And, you know, we've gotten much better since those days at actually dealing with stuff. I mean, you know, we're hugely funded by the county. You know, we're hugely funded by some, you know, really great, reputable people who see the advantage to what we do, you know. You know, like the thing we've wrestled with a lot as Music is Art is when people hear Music is Art, all they think about is what goes on in Delaware Park, because that's like the big day and that's when the most people are made aware of what we do. We try that day to kind of spread the word a little bit about some of the other stuff we do, but that's really not what the day's about so much. You know, the day's about showing what's going on. And you know, but the more and more people learn kind of about the things that we are trying to do, you know, and the programming that we've run over the years, you know, they start to see that we bring kind of that same vibe and that same level of kind of acceptance that we try to have with the festival into our organization itself. And that allows us to do a lot of really great things.
Do you still do programming at schools?
Yeah. We're actually doing a guitar workshop right now. I'm doing a Buffalo Performing Arts. I'm doing a speaker series with them tomorrow night. And then with Buffalo Music Hall of Fame, we're doing a whole series of speakers that we're helping put together. And we're doing some programming coming up soon with NCCC. Yeah. And we're going to do some things with recording and songwriting with them. And so, yeah. So, you know, there's some things, you know, that are bubbling up. There's a program called You Rock, which we've been working on right now. It's probably going to launch in a real small way at the NCCC event. And then we're going to run a camp, you know, where, you know, we do it for a bit longer. So we got a lot of stuff going, you know, but it's funny, like I said, you know, we have a lot of programs that have run and then run their course, you know, because we have 10 years worth of programming that we've been running now. So, but yeah, a lot of stuff going on though, for sure.
Makes me think, I was just at a show at Sugar City the other night, which is recently, they are legal and up and running.
That's awesome.
In a very similar vein, they made sure that they dotted their T's and crossed their I's, as I like to say.
You have to. You have to, because you're going to end up getting trouble, because so many well-intended people, just because they don't do things the right way, end up having to stop doing what they're doing, you know, because they're just, because they don't have their ducks lined up. The big thing with me, when we started Music is Art, at the end of the year, every year, I would write a check because I was the supporter of it. So if the festival cost us back then $6,000 to do, I would write a check for $6,000 and we'd be done with it. That was, you know, in 2000. Like, a guy who's in a band, like, isn't always going to be making the kind of money that I was making when I could just write a check for $6,000. And that's what I was reminded. Like, when we decided we wanted this thing to be real, you know, and to have the commitment that we needed, it needed to live on its own. You know, it needed to be, you know, like, if I get hit by a bus tomorrow, you know, we need to figure out, how does this thing run by itself? So it got to a point where it was like mantra, like you're not going to do that anymore, you know, and we're going to figure out a way to make this happen. And it seemed like an unreachable goal, but we started reaching out to people that we had been helping and saying, look, man, you know, we're trying to make this thing real. You know, can you help us out? And, you know, a lot of really great people have come on, and, you know, a lot of really great people support us each year, for some for recognition at the festival. You know, they get in the program, you know, they get, you know, they get mentioned on the posters, you know, that kind of stuff. You know, they get to set up at the festival if they want. But some just to support the organization and the idea of what we do. You know, I think we put like $250,000 worth of instruments or something in schools already. Yeah, but it's over a long time. You know, like, that's the thing. Like, you stick around for, it's like my band, you know. You stick around for a while, and then, you know, just what you turn around and you're like, whoa, I did all that. You know, like, that's kind of what this is like. You know, like, just every year we, you know, put out a batch of stuff and a batch of stuff and a batch of stuff, and, you know, it's worked out really well. And people in Western New York have been super giving, you know, helping out. People, you know, the folks in the music stores, you know, we work out deals with people. We'll give them some instruments, they'll fix some instruments, you know, like that kind of stuff. And, you know, everybody's really been willing because they're passionate about music. You know, they're willing to pitch in and, you know, to help out, because they know it's going to get more instruments in more kids' hands.
And it's very much, I think, also part of some of what I've identified as the Buffalo mentality, which is, in some ways, we support our own. And in some ways, we're not going to expect the government, or we're not expecting someone else to make things better for us. Like, we're going to figure out a way to
do it for ourselves.
Though at a certain point, you get big enough where, you know, the county's giving you money.
That's how it's worked for us, right. You know. Like I said, that's not how it started. You know, like the idea began first. And then I think when people saw the value of what attaching the minds of Music is Art to stuff, I think they were willing to support it a little bit more. And that meaning, you go to the people, you know, and you say, you know, what do y'all think? You know, is this part of what we should do? And their representatives decide that it is. And, you know, you grow into that position. And, you know, because, you know, I mean, there's many places, you know, like, there were years early on, like, you know, I had friends that used to like hang from hooks and stuff. It was kind of this thing that they did, and so we had displays of that stuff, and it really caused quite an uproar downtown. It was while the art gallery was there, it was while the Allentown Art Festival was going on, and it really caused quite an uproar at the time.
A couple years too early. Now
I couldn't imagine then growing into what I just explained to you, you know, an organization, you know, that does the things we do, you know, works with kids. But it came from that spirit. Mm-hmm. It really did, mm-hmm. You know. And once again, I refer back to my band again. It's the same thing. It's the difference between what my band does, you know, which plays songs that go on hot AC radio next to a lot of other bands that kind of don't have anything to do with what we do or what we are. You know, we grew up being kids that played at the Continental and playing at CBGB's and playing Max's Kansas City and you know, doing all that kind of stuff, and you know, touring in vans, and you know, doing it for real, and you know, growing to this point, you know, where this many years later, you know, we do the things we do. It's not like we wear it like an uncomfortable suit. We just kind of go in, we kind of make it happen, and then go back and stay in our little gaggle, you know, and just kind of make our music and make things happen, you know. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun.
I know the last thing I want to say about music is art is I think maybe why it's had such resonancy is it's not self-serving, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's both a celebration,
yeah,
and it's like a phenomenal party,
yeah,
but it's also something that gives back in this way that's very tangible, as you were describing.
And you know, I don't try to pretend like I know what's going on with a lot of this stuff. Like, guys who I hire to do DJs, you know, like, they, that's what they know, you know. The folks who we know that hire the curate, the artists, you know, like, they know that, you know, that's the world they know. You know, we bring in people who know the worlds they know, and once you get everybody kind of working together and having it all happen, you know, it just, I don't know, it's just fun, man. Everybody has a great time, you know, even when it's raining, even when, you know, it's you know, 10 in the morning and there's literally four people sitting there on the hill watching the band play, you know, they're okay with it. You know, like, I mean, you know, I'm sure they would like to play in front of more people, but like, they're playing and they're happy, you know, I'm there, I'm talking, you know, it's like, it's going on, it's happening, you know, and they're starting the day, you know,
it's good collaboration too. Well, I am not hoping for it to be September yet. I am looking forward to it.
Yeah.
I need summer to last a minute.
I think, I'm trying to get, I think Pinky Doodle Poodle, the band that's playing here, I think they're coming back. They played about 4 years ago. I think they're coming back this year to play. Got a few other kind of semi-musical surprises coming up.
Mm.
Yeah, Green Jello may be coming back again this year.
Awesome.
Again, yeah. Awesome. Yeah, they're going to play here a couple times between now and then too, actually. Mm-hmm.
Getting to sign up for infringement.
Yeah. Have you ever met them before, Bill?
Man, I haven't met them in person.
Yeah, they're a trip, man. Yeah, he's a trip. Yeah, we're trying to put a tour together right now with Pinky Doodle Poodle and Green Jello around the U.S. Mm-hmm. So hopefully it'll work. Mm-hmm. I hope so, because I really love that band. So
I've only heard them at Music as Art.
Any other times? I should play some of this Pinky Doodle Poodle stuff. It's really good. They came here and recorded an album about 4 years ago that we released on my label. And Shonen Knife's going to be here June 3rd, too. Yeah, they're playing a Music as Art benefit. So, yeah. Pinky Doodle Poodle will be working on their third album here in September, too.
So this has become, I mean, I'm sure it could be a full-time job for you if you didn't have everything else as well and that sort of thing.
Yeah, you know, like I said, man, you know, Goo Goo Dolls kind of like, you know, I got a manager, I have a booking agent, I got three lawyers, I have an assistant that works in the office that handles our day-to-day stuff, you know, like, you know, I got a four-person road crew that's on retainer all the time. So, like, a lot of that stuff's taken care of, especially since we've been doing this for a while, everybody kind of knows their jobs. Like, my guitar tech that takes care of my stuff has been with me for 14 years. So, like, he takes care of everything, you know? And Justin runs the studio here. And my wife and I run our record label. And Tracy Shattuck runs Music as Art with our board of directors. So what I actually have to do isn't as substantial as it feels when I talk about it, you know.
It's a very good place to be.
Yeah. Like, I mean, it's still, I'm away a lot. You know, I travel a lot. And, you know, I live about a block away from the studio, so I'm back and forth from my house a lot. You know, I have a 3-year-old daughter, so I try to see her as much as I can. So it's nice that I live close, but you know, I just do as much as I feel that I'm comfortable doing, and you know, try to keep my life in some sort of zen-like state, you know, so I can get through to the next day.
Yeah. Here's a question. So I think, are you're the only member of the Goo Goo Dolls who's living in Buffalo, right?
Yes. Yeah. Well, the band is pretty much just Johnny and
right it's
now.
Just the two of you, I know you've had different drummers at various points. What, and I hate the way questions like this come out, because I feel like Buffalo has such a victim complex in so many ways.
Yeah.
And there's
football.
Football. Yeah, it's the football. It is the football. It's the football. It really is the football. Let's be honest. It was the industry. It's the post-industrial wrestling city. You know?
You know, a lot of it, for a long time, was brought upon itself, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, people in Buffalo kind of acted that way, honestly. You know, as when things started kind of getting bad, people acted that way. And I don't think people are acting that way as much now. I think that that's great. I think this is the first time in my adult life that I've seen people not be that way in this town. Like, when I leave and talk to people, when I used to leave and talk to people, they would always say Buffalo with a smirk on their face. I swear to God, it's true. I don't know why. It was just the way it was. And I think it's because that's how this city played itself. And I think slowly that's wearing off right now. I think it wears off from in the inside. It's not going to wear off from the outside, because it's easy to look down at people. That's easy, you know, you know, you let people do that, and that's what they'll do. And you make people believe that that's what you deserve, and that's what you're going to get. And, you know, right now, I think that there's people coming in and taking stock in the good things that are here. This last winter sure didn't help. You know, my wife's from Tokyo, and she's like, are you serious, man? She's like, where did you move me, you know? The first year we moved, I moved into the South Towns, and we got like 6 feet of snow or something like that the first year. And then, and then we had a couple of good years there. I came back here because when I was living away from here, I was living in L.A., and when you do something in L.A., it's different than doing it here. When you do something in L.A., you're immediately thinking, can I sell this to somebody? You know, is this going to work? You know, what's the publisher going to think? It was all about how you were going to fit into the business of what goes on. When I came back here to do things, and LA's got a million, you know, millions of people, millions and millions and millions of people. It's like, so it's harder to get things done to begin with. And it's more expensive to get things done to begin with and to live to begin with. So what I found myself doing was living in LA and coming here to do those things that I was talking about before. Those things that, like, you know, produce records. And not produce records, like, because someone's hired me to produce their record. Producing a record because I heard a band and went, wow, I like this band, I want to produce this record. Or, wow, I like these people, I want to produce this record. You know, like that kind of thing. So I found myself coming back to do that. And the music is art started up. And I found myself coming back more to do this stuff. I was doing stuff in LA, too. I was working with some people in LA. I was working there and doing my thing. But I was finding that my gig, which was Goo Goo Dolls, was supporting my life. And this other stuff that I was doing wasn't making me happy, you know, when I was out there. So I would come back here to work on stuff that made me happy, you know, to feel like I was, like, making, like, a little bit of a difference, to feel like I was working with a group of people who listen to my idea and go, wow, that's a great idea, let's do that, instead of, hey, you know what, talk to my people and we'll figure out, like, how we're gonna make this thing work, you know? Like, that's the thing I fell in love with again, you know, after leaving and after being as fortunate as I could possibly be. I'm not complaining about, you know, the life I, you know, was handed, man. It's like when it popped and it happened and we moved out there, and it's awesome. And I was so busy that I didn't even have a chance to think about this stuff, you know? But then I had the time between records where there was a little bit of time off, and, you know, I started coming back here and working a little bit, doing some things. And like I said, you know, that the feeling of, you know, working with a band that's working because, you know, they really want to work, you know, and not just because, you know, they're hiring you to come in and make you one thing or another, you know, it's like something that you feel invested in, you know, and it's not just a gig, you know, mm-hmm. and that's pretty awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I found the ability to be, you know, Buffalo is also a very honest city.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that partially because of how affordable it is, but it's easier to take big risks without it being potentially catastrophic if it doesn't work out.
Yeah. You know, like, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of architecture here that's available, you know.
So where did you go to school? Or what did you go to school for?
I didn't go to school for music. I took music a little bit when I was in school. Played trombone, you know, through high school, that kind of thing. And then I went to school for broadcasting, media communications at MDI. Got a 4-year degree there and ended up working in radio at a few radio stations here in town. And that led to me doing an internship here at Trackmaster Studios at the time, and and here I sit all these years later.
So I have my general questions here, but I'd like to ask you some more specific ones. I'd like to ask you about your early days in the punk scene in Buffalo.
Uh-huh.
I'd like to ask you about the Continental.
Yeah.
Just what that vibe was like.
Yeah, it's this, you know, punk rock bar. Old punk rock bar was kind of a show bar, then it was a gay bar, and then it kind of, they started to allow the kind of punk rock bands to play there. And and there was a great scene. I entered it probably a few years after it had started up. And you know, got a chance to see some pretty great bands there, and you know, but it was a community, a very much so a mixed community of people there. You know, if you like that kind of music, that was pretty much the only place to go. There were a couple other fleeting places, but Mr. Shab's, the Subway, you know, there were a few other places that you could go play, but for the most part, you were going to be playing the Continental. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you about Lance Diamond and your relationship with him, especially since we lost him just earlier this year.
Yeah, I was just actually at a meeting about him. We're trying to get a statue built, actually. We're starting to talk to some people, so hopefully we can make that happen. Man, great friend, man, great dude. Taught me a super lot, you know, and gone way too quick, way too early, that's for sure, you know. I always forgot he was older than me, you know, never really dawned on me, you know, that, but, you know, when you look at the math, I guess, you know, that's the reality of it. But, so we're going to do our best to, we got a bunch of songs that he never finished that he sang on that we're going to work on. And
how old were you when you met him?
I was probably 20 when I met him. Yeah, 21 maybe. Yeah. I lived in an apartment, in the apartment below him, and I was being 20, would fight with my girlfriend, she would throw me out, he'd let me go sleep on his couch, and we'd sit up all night watching movies and laughing and listening to music, and became super good friends and did a lot of shows and recording and just hanging out. He had quit drinking right when I met him, so, and I had at that point, so I spent a lot of years he'd be tearing me out of bars 4 o'clock in the morning, come on, you're going home. No, he's a great friend
because you play very different types of music, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but see, we got to be good friends first, and you know, I would always tell him, you know, like, he was probably my age when I met him, you know, and no, well, he was younger than I now when I met him. Wow, it's crazy. And I can remember thinking to myself, man, if I'm doing with, there's no way I'm going to be playing music when I'm, when I'm 40 years old, you know. I remember telling him that. He'd be laughing, you're going to be, come on, Robbie, you're going to be playing music, I'm telling you, you know. And, you know, it's in your heart, buddy, you know. And I'd be like, yeah, okay. But, you know, he was right, of course, as he usually was. So, you know, it's really sad. You know, but part of life, and you know, so we keep his memory alive here, and make it the way he'd want it to be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I see a lot of what you do with the way you engage in the community to be different ways of how he supported the community too. Like, he was, you know, in some ways, Lance, you just think is like, oh, you know, where else are we gonna go? You know, let's go there.
Yeah, but he was just always here, man. He knew that this community supported him, and when he had opportunities, he would always weigh those opportunities against losing his situation here, you know. And sometimes, you know, that plan to sometimes 200, sometimes 2 people at the Elmwood Lounge, mm-hmm. you know, for him was more important, you know, than doing some other things, because he knew that if, you know, he didn't want to let that segment, he didn't want to let those people down, man, be it 2 or 200. Mm-hmm. He didn't want to let them down. So, you know, went out and did his thing. And, you know, just like all musicians, you know, towards the end, it was getting harder and harder to get gigs, you know, and, you know, not him in particular, just in general, you know, it gets harder and harder, you know, because a lot of people are using recorded music and DJs and stuff now, you know, so your opportunities become a little less. But, you know, he still managed, you know, to do it right up until the very, very end, you know, which is, once again, exactly the way he would have wanted it.
Yeah. And he was, there's just such charisma there that I don't know if we're ever going to, I mean, there is no comparison.
No.
There's
no
one else. That,
no, I mean, there's never going to be that again,
yeah.
You know, I mean, there'll definitely be, you know,
other
dynamic people that come out of this city, but there's not going to be that again. If, you know, once again, happens for real. It's like, it's, you know, there's no bullshit, man. It's like, you know, he started out, you know, let's face it, man, he started out in a time where the world was a lot different than it is today, man. And you know, he would tell me sometimes, you know he'd have to watch his back, like, quite often, you know, because, you know, people weren't accepting of stuff, you know, back in the late 60s, you know, when he started out. And it was in his heart enough, you know, to go out there and give it every single night and you know, become part of the creative scene here, you know. And of course, you know, a lot of walls have fallen down since then, you know, and you know, but it came from that real place, you know, like, you know, it's real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We should totally have a statue.
We're trying, man. We're trying. We talked to Larry Griffiths today, and we talked to some other folks today. It's not cheap, though, man.
No.
Yeah, it costs a lot of money. So we were talking about some options, you know. Yeah, Kickstarter. We talked about doing some other things as well. I don't know.
Indiegogo is the one where you get the money. So just the last thing I want to ask you is, as one of Buffalo's favorite musical sons, what advice could you give to young emerging musicians?
I think do what you're doing because you love to do it, and because you feel that it's the right thing for you to do. Don't try to do things because you think that you're going to become successful by doing them or anything. Do what's true to you. Do what feels good. There's like outlets for everything these days. You know, if you love bluegrass music, then you know what? Play bluegrass music. You know, if you love bluegrass music and death metal, play those things. You know, it's like, you know, whatever you love, do it. There's outlets for all that stuff. And, you know, you may end up doing it 30 years later. So make sure you love it. Yeah, you know, and just be true to yourself, because, you know, it's your stuff, you know, it's your music, and if you're a songwriter, then, you know, write your songs, man, and be proud of them, and make sure that, you know, you're gonna deliver them the way you want them heard, and then you won't regret anything later on.
Now here's the other side of this. Normally I ask one or the other, but I'm asking you both. If you could give yourself any advice at 20 years old, what would you tell yourself?
The advice, here's the catch 22 here. The advice that I would give myself would probably cause me to not be sitting here talking to you about this right now, because I wouldn't have taken the chances. Like, I would have directed myself in other ways. Mm-hmm. And the happy set of circumstances that have led to this moment, you know, probably never would have happened, and so I would have given myself the wrong advice, probably.